If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Every once in a while, we have to bring out the big dog.
Yeah.
Oh, God help us. It's time for Danny Unleashed. Sponsored by Easton Roofing, where integrity matters. Go to EastonRoofing.com for more.
Danny Klingscale brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Estimates are always free. Suggestions. They're built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Integrity matters. Danny, my friend, how are you?
Doing just fine, Seren. Ready for a nice holiday. Ready to give people a little entree on their way home to the holiday and provide high-level entertainment of the highest order.
As we will do our best, first of all, happy holidays to you, my friend. I hope you and the family, and I know they're probably still scattered about, right? I hope.
Yeah, we're not. There's going to be no family. The girls are staying in California, and so there'll be none of that. But we're doing a little something with Jane's sister and her husband, who are nice people. And I don't think we're actually not doing dinner. We're just doing a little dessert. So there's things going on in my life that, and it has nothing to do with me, that preclude an actual full meal. So. We're going to enjoy what we can on the holiday and enjoy a little bit of good fellowship. And I know that most people are going to have a compromised Thanksgiving, but enjoy it. And actually, I sort of repurposed a blog that I wrote last year around Thanksgiving about the word thank. And I think it's kind of fun if people want to check it out at DannyKlingscale.com.
Yes, indeed.
So yeah, I am, and I love hearing everybody's Thanksgiving stories. And I did tell Jed to give you a heads up that if you want to start off with being able to make lots of fun of me, you have never heard the answer that I will give to the question of what is my favorite side dish at Thanksgiving.
Okay, let's hear it.
Mashed turnip.
I'll see you guys later.
And this isn't like some kind of development later. This actually was part of the family meal that was served when I was a child. But
right.
I will say that most people liked the other dishes more than the turnip. They liked the squash more than the turnip. I liked the turnip.
Danny sure likes his mashed turnip.
And my mom would always...
What blanked up fool in your family hatched a mashed turnip?
Thank you. When Danny informed me of this information, I said, oh my God, that's awful. And then I was like, no, that's the most on par Danny Klingscale thing of all time. And I thought about it for a moment. I was like, Danny, you never disappoint. I'll say that.
How are they not immediately turned away from the family dinner?
I don't know. When I was, as long as I can remember, that was part of what was put out there for Thanksgiving, and I liked it. Now, I was the oldest child, and I must say that my younger siblings generally passed, but my mom knew how much.
Was there garlic and onion and stuff, green onion added to it? Or is
no,
just,
I,
I'm looking
much
at some
was,
pictures.
Pretty much was just mashed with a little butter I don't really
looks
like
mashed potatoes to me.
I really don't pictures. Like. Well, you're probably looking at the more white version, which is rutabaga.
And there's also,
actually
orange,
the orangish one. It sort of looks like light squash, to be honest, and it has a more bitter flavor. And I don't like really sweet food. I like sweets, but I don't like sweet food. So I liked it far more than squash.
No. Sweets are sweet food, jackass. If you're consuming it and eating it. It's a food.
No, I mean, when I'm eating a meal, not dessert, I don't like sweet things. I don't like pineapple on pizza. I don't
I agree.
Things like that. And so squash to me gets into the area of a sweet, sweet potatoes with marshmallows, as we heard earlier.
That wouldn't
be for me, but a nice bitter plate of turnip. Sounds just dandy in my world.
Who would imagine that Danny would fancy a plate of bitter food?
Delicious. And even here's a real test of, you know, how you know your wife really, in an area that's completely different, really does love you. My wife will still, she will occasionally, you know, outside of Thanksgiving, will make me mashed turnip, and it's a horrendous process to make. It's hard to even cut to get.
Again, so Danny.
Yes.
But I don't ask. She just went ahead and did it. And I appreciate it. So anyway, there you go. Have you ever heard that answer before from anyone else?
What would Danny like?
No one's
like,
heard that answer from anyone
else. What's his ultimate
else?
Meal? It's turnips and lemon rinds.
I don't really like
figs.
Lemon.
You can't forget figs.
I don't like figs. You know, you always that's your go-to thing about what I like to eat. I don't like figs.
And various cheeses.
You eat like random greenery.
I do like greenery.
Odd cheeses.
You know, love cheese. There's almost no cheese that I don't like. Don't really
Velveeta.
Like the super stinkiest.
Velveeta?
He likes to, Danny likes
you know,
to break
Vel-
out some.
Velveeta has its own, it has its place. I can't say that
American cheese.
I've sit there and watched Danny kill off an entire package of Kraft American cheese slices, individually wrapped,
American
plops
cheese,
them in his mouth.
So American. Hey, let's take all the real flavor and goodness out of cheese and serve it up
none
to
of
the public.
Calories.
It's horrendous.
Listen, you're so wrong about American cheese.
I heard your diatribe about boxed food, so don't sound like you're. What a joke.
How am I trying to sound cultured when I tell you I like Velveeta and American cheese?
No, I know. You're not.
I'm anything but.
You're not. I'll tell you another thing.
Grow up, you and your single mom, you'll live for some boxed food.
Oh, yeah. 'Cause
when she gets her tired ass off work at 6:30 and drags it home, you ain't starting from scratch at 7 o'clock at night. So
no,
my mother was a horrendous
cook, and my dad had an ulcer. So we and he was either had a glorious job in television or he had no job. So I have eaten my share of government issue food. Believe me, my poor mom trying to mix a carnation milk, not even really carnation, government issued powdered milk with regular milk to fool the kids, so us little a-holes wouldn't say, "But mom, I can see the bowl through the bottom of the milk. What's the matter?"
Spaghetti and meatballs. In my house for quite a while. Spaghetti. Tomato soup and chopped up hot dogs.
Ooh,
yep.
Ooh,
that was spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're, for instance, the brother I'm closest in age to, who I used to be close to, but I'm not.
And by the way, let me tell you something, not bad.
Yeah,
pretty damn good.
I'm telling you.
I enjoyed it. You throw some Parmesan cheese on that, and I was a happy little fat kid.
You've never not lived until. The other fakery she had to try and pull off was that she bought these big cans of mackerel instead of tuna because there was a lot of it, and it sucked.
Yeah.
It sucked. It was oily and horrendous. It's a terrible family memory. I'll say that. So I couldn't wait till Dad got in front of a camera again so we didn't have to
Hey, Dad, could you get a job, please? So I can quit eating mackerel?
It was Dad,
do you not see what we're eating?
It was a very
put on some pants and get a job.
Schizophrenic. He was a hard working fella. He would paint houses and stuff in between, but it was like what a juxtaposition we'd have. He'd be making like six figures and then the next year he'd be
eating mackerel.
He'd be waiting for his check from getting disability, getting out of the service early. He's waiting for that check with bated breath.
People don't know Danny's dad was a big-time TV guy.
Bob Klingscale.
Yeah, if you Google him, you might be able to find the promotional announcements with Bob Klingscale.
I'll find one. I'm not doing anything else.
But
you're right. Like when those jobs go away and then there's no competes and things like that, it's lean times, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, he worked for five different television stations in Boston. But the worst story, and then we can move on to real things at sports. Of course, you spent the whole last hour not doing that. But anyway, at one point, this was a couple of years later, he had gotten a good job, and then there was a little lean time, and then he'd gotten another good job. And at that point, for whatever reason, we were discussing something, and he informed my brother and I in a conversation that during that interim period where he was painting houses or whatever, he had been offered an anchor job in Honolulu, and he turned it down.
And we're like, Dad, what is wrong with you? He goes, well, I thought you boys liked it here in Boston. I'm like, oh, yeah, 11-year-old surfing. That sounds awful. We don't want to do that.
WBZ, right?
Well, he worked. No, it's WCVB is the one where you can probably find the videos. Yeah, he worked for WBZ, WHDA, all of them.
So we could have been in Hawaii, and
And instead you were painting houses. That's delightful, Dad. good plan. Good plan.
I remember when I was struggling to find my first gig out of college. A buddy of mine were like, "If we don't have jobs by this day, we're gonna go be bartenders in Hawaii." Because if our job's going to suck, or the rest of our life is not. And we had made a pact that we were going to move to Hawaii, and that was going to be the deal. So, yeah, I understand your angst on that one. Danny Unleashed, you never know what's coming. He's brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Danny, let me throw this question at you. How many quarterbacks could you put on the Chiefs and you would say that they are a real Super Bowl contender and or leader, if you want to define it that way, like the leader for the Super Bowl? And flip that around. How many teams can Patrick Mahomes go to? Or let's say, how many quarterbacks do you put on this team and they're a playoff team? How many are making a Super Bowl team? And let's flip it around. How many teams does Mahomes go to and they're a Super Bowl team or a playoff team?
This is a very complicated question, but I will try to boil it down. I think that the usual suspects would be the same, because I don't think the Chiefs are leaps and bounds better than other teams at other positions, but they're pretty good, you know, especially on offense. So there'd be a few quarterbacks who'd come in here and be a little better. They'd have Andy Reid, and they'd have more weaponry than they had where they were. But I think it's maybe just the usual suspects with a couple of additions, maybe like Deshaun Watson in that category, because that's what it takes these days. I mean, the game is so structured to make the quarterback so important that you just can't have – I don't think a mediocre – well, like you said, Alex Smith is a better-than-average quarterback, and the Chiefs weren't going to the Super Bowl with him. Now, they're a little better now, I think, personnel-wise, than they were when Alex Smith was here.
I agree, particularly you see that 13 team, and you're like, Donnie Avery and
– oh, yeah. But even when Kelsey and Hill –
the stoned remnants of Dwayne Bowe and
– Kelsey and Hill are better than they were under Alex Smith as well. So, and the reason it's complicated is because we've never seen Patrick Mahomes without this high-octane weaponry around him. I mean, he's had good tools from the jump. Not like he's not good or whatever. You know, I'm not trying to say he is made by Andy Reid and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. But those are studs, all of them. And so you just don't know. You know, he never makes any mistakes. He never throws any interceptions. If he went to another team, you mentioned the Bears, for instance, he'd be throwing some interceptions. He would. He'd have to force the ball more. He'd be under more pressure. He wouldn't have as good a play caller. So I'll say he would elevate most teams to have a shot at the playoffs. And I think only the teams that are really loaded but their quarterback is somewhat compromised, like the Rams, would be shifted into another category by Patrick Mahomes.
I agree. And so it's more about Mahomes than it is the other 52, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he does. The Chiefs lose the last two games if almost every other quarterback in the league is quarterbacking them.
I agree. And to your point, like Tyreek Hill, first 2 years in the league, granted, he's a rookie, but still, 593 receiving on 61 catches. He averaged 9.7 yards per catch. Next year, again, with Alex Smith, 75 for 1183, 15.8, and 7 touchdowns. Since then, 87 and 1479, 17 per catch, 12 TDs. Plays only 10 games. Last year, 58 for 860, just under 15 yards per catch, 7 touchdowns. So that would have averaged out to another, it would have been 11 touchdowns in that one. He's got 10 touchdowns through 10 games, so he's on pace for 16 touchdowns this year. 55 for 752, right at just under 14 yards per catch. To me, the thing that jumps out, it's the touchdowns, right? Patrick Mahomes will find you in the end zone. He will get you the ball in position to score touchdowns. And I'm with you. There's no doubt. There's good weaponry here. And you know what this all says to me? Like when they win the shootout with the Raiders, whatever you do, right, the lesson to be learned from the Dick Vermeil era is what? Do not just sit and throw all your resources at the defensive side of the ball. first and foremost, keep the offense strong, and when you can, add to the defense, right? Because it is even more than the Vermeil era, vastly more. It's an offensive game.
Yes.
And they were one penalty away from going to the Super Bowl in 18 with nothing on defense. Their defense is fine. They need to make the offense, make sure that the offense is strong. And so they need to be finding a tight end ready to step in for Kelce or just play second fiddle to him for 4 years and be really good and give Andy Reid options that way. Like, the thing that scares me, and this is what scared me in the Chris Jones signing, is, you know, and I'm quite optimistic the defense is going to play a lot better because I have a lot of confidence in Steve Spagnuolo. But if they don't, and everyone's kind of figured out Spagnuolo's schemes and his blitzes, and they're like, okay, this is all we got to do, then you've got all this money tied up and, frankly, draft pick investment in Frank Clark, in Chris Jones, in Anthony Hitchens, and in Tyrann Mathieu, and you're not good. And, like, they cannot trend down to being the 22nd defense with what they've invested in this side of the ball.
Well, I completely agree. I'll go back to the last two games. The defense played bad, but they had enough firepower to win those games. And, you know, they have invested a lot of resources in the defense, and those guys have got to play to their contracts a little bit more. I just don't understand the lack of defensive line acumen so far this year. If teams are in a game and are dedicated to running the ball, they can. And the Chiefs, while getting some pressure, can't get to the quarterback. So that's kind of inexcusable, to be honest.
I think I'm optimistic that they are going to get like 5 sacks against Brady, and they're going to pressure him, and they're going to create turnovers because they hold the ball and they want him to go down the field, and he doesn't have all his crossing routes where he's literally throwing the ball 6 yards in the air because the guy's crossing right in front of him. And they're not running that. They're trying to stretch the field and get it down the field. Like, Bruce Arians has not morphed his offense to fit Brady. He's asking Brady to fit his offense, which has him on pace for 36-13, which is no joke, right? That's still a
no, but I think he's got to find a little more happy medium. I heard somebody make the analogy today that what Bruce Arians is doing is like bringing Ben Simmons into your team and telling him that because we shoot threes, you're going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's you know, it's an exaggeration to make a point, but
right.
It's a long – yeah, I get it. Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. You know, and they've got guys. I mean, if you've got good receivers, they can run any route and be effective.
Right, and also if you've got Tom Brady, who's a super accurate player, and you've got talented receivers, they can take, you know, 9-yard crossing patterns and turn them into 30-yard gains. Because he's gonna generally, you know, put the ball on them in a place where they're running at top speed, and you know they're not reaching back and doing things like that. So, I mean, he is still capable of throwing the ball far enough. I just don't think he's accurate enough doing it, or you know, he's just not practiced in doing it. I think that's kind of the case. I mean, the two interceptions he threw the other day were plays that. He had the arm strength to make the throw. He just didn't put it where it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I think I agree, and I think there are limitations to what he can do. And Jason Anderson had the stat: 0 for his last 22 on throws over 20 yards.
Right, and I think he's, you know, like 1 for 15 over 15 yards recently. You know, with a, you know, couple inter, you know, 5 interceptions or something like that. So
those kind of limitations to me are like, if I'm Steve Spagnuolo, I'm licking my chops. I know what he can't do. I know when they show this, it's just for show. Even if we give up one big one over the top, fine, great. We're going to get 30 on the other side. So we are going to like dare him to beat us over the top because he hasn't proven that he can do it.
I agree. And I think Steve Spagnuolo is willing to take chances that other defensive coordinators really aren't, and I think a big part of it is because he's got 15 on his team. But at the end of the last couple games, he's just emptying the gun at the end of games, and it's almost like, well, you know what, if they go for 75 and a touch, we'll have more time.
We have more time for Patrick, which is smart defense.
Yes, exactly. And this is a point that Stan Weber made on the podcast we did the other day. that this is something that almost all defensive coordinators are not coming around to, and Steve Spagnuolo seems to be. But then again, they don't have Patrick Mahomes, but some of them have a very good quarterback who's capable of driving the field at the end, given a minute
really
and 43 seconds.
If the conclusion is we can't stop them,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter how long. I mean, more time, like the worse your quarterback is, the more important it is to do that. Because he needs more time to get down the field.
Right, exactly.
Alex Smith needs 4 minutes to go down the field and score. I mean, I'm not trying to be flippant. There are other quarterbacks that aren't going to go down the field and score. But if you got to throw it, Alex Smith can do it. He can definitely do the field goal. He might be able to do the touchdown, but you're not going to do it in 143 in one timeout. There is no way on earth that Alex Smith would have taken that team down and scored a touchdown. He might have been lined up for a 48-yarder to a 38-yarder as time expired to tie it.
Well, we saw what happened two games ago with Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, he had plenty of time, and he only needed a field goal, and he couldn't do it.
Well, I'll tell you, the last play where Mahomes runs and John Abram, jackass that he is, comes flying up there to stop the run, and Mahomes drops an easy spin to, you know, a wide-open Travis Kelce. Alex Smith runs for 8, and the clock is ticking. And you either burn the last timeout, or no, they were out of timeouts, right?
Either good point.
Tick the clock down to about, you know, probably, what, 10 seconds and spike it, and you got one play.
I don't know. Once Abrams came barreling up the field, even
Smith. No way Smith throws it. No
He's wide
way.
Open. I mean, he was wide open.
He might have
Do
missed
you
him.
Remember when he would run?
Yeah.
As soon as he started to run, he would be 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and he had tucked the ball away like a running back. He is done. His eyes were never down the field. He was off to the races.
I don't know. That play was so wide open. Like I had an argument with my wife.
He'd already put the ball away, Danny. He was done looking downfield.
I watched
it time and time again, and I listened to people say, Andy Reid sucks clock management-wise. Like, he doesn't get it. Why is it? And then, or he'd take a check down. He wouldn't throw it to Kelce. He'd have taken the running back in the flat. Who would have been tackled in bounds.
I said a million times when we do postgame or whatever, when you watch Alex Smith play, usually when some guy breaks the pocket and you're, say, a fan of the other team, you're like, oh, we're in trouble here. And normally he was just, like, either going to run for a first down, but he wasn't going to kill you. There wasn't going to be There was not going to be some guy running free who had broken away from his pattern. So very, you know.
Whereas when Mahomes breaks containment, crap.
Oh,
we're getting killed.
No question. I mean, right, you think when it doesn't happen, you're like...
you're amazed.
You're amazed and relieved if you're the opponent.
Yeah. No, it's night and day. We'll take a break. Danny Klingscale is with you, is with us, as a matter of fact. He's brought to you by Easton Roofing. Your roof is high. Their workers are not. Got residential or commercial roofing problems? Easton Roofing will fix them so you can get back to business faster. Call Easton Roofing today to schedule your free honest estimate. Easton Roofing, integrity matters.
The program with Soren Petro.
Flip right double X jet, 36 counter naked waglet, 7X quarter.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense into the hour answer. What player holds the NFL record for touchdowns scored in a Thanksgiving Day game?
One game.
I mean, doesn't like Barry Sanders or Megatron or Emmitt Smith?
He is in a three-way tie for the overall NFL record for touchdowns scored in a game. It has happened to come on Thanksgiving Day. He was the first of the three.
Scored six touchdowns?
Six.
Gale Sayers.
Gale Sayers is one of the ones who scored six, but not on Thanksgiving Day.
Right.
Doc.
I thought he was the only one with six.
Mm-mm.
I think you're wrong.
He also holds a record for points scored in a game with 40.
Oh, Paul Hornung.
Ernie Nevers, Cardinals versus Bears on Thanksgiving Day 1929. Somebody else scored six, and I can't think of
really?
Who it was. Yep.
I thought it was only Gale.
Dub Jones also scored six for the Browns against the Bears in 1951.
Maybe he's the only one with six rushing touchdowns.
That could
no,
be.
Gale did it.
No, there was a kick. Yeah, there was a kick return. Yeah,
I think he had four rushing, a receiving, and a kick return. He might even have had a kick, a punt, a receiving, and three rushing.
Yeah, I think you're right.
80-yard pass, 21-yard run, 7-yard run, 50-yard run, 1-yard run, 85-yard punt return. Yeah, you know.
Wow. So what was it? One punt?
And five runs.
And five runs?
No, one punt, four runs, and an 80-yard pass.
Oh.
Pass. Right, it's like whatevs.
And I think the 80-yard pass probably was thrown 6 yards.
probably was.
Probably, since it was such a sloppy, muddy game.
And they also they
since
didn't
his
like,
name was Rudy Bukic.
They didn't, you know, put the running back in the slot back in the day.
Although Gale Sayers could have done it.
He sure could have done it, yes.
He could have done it. He could have done it. Good sense what we were playing for. Good sense what my family had for lunch. You know how I did it? I went and I clickety-clicked. I was on the computer. You can use the app. That's a super quick way as well. I was on the computer, put in Good Sense, logged in, and then it said where. I clicked where. It said last order. I said yes. Which is titled Family Petro Family Order, and I clicked it, and that's it. I was done. 22 minutes later, I was picking up Good Sense, and the guys were great. Much love over to the folks at 107th and Row, where I picked up today at the Good Sense. So get it right now, GoodSenseSubs.com, the app. And, of course, the Loyalty Club, I got $4 off. I think it was $4.20 because I had 420 points. And it's 10% off basically on your next order. So get it right now at Good Sense, locally owned and operated, founded in Lenexa, Kansas. That is your Good Sense. Danny Klinkscale is with us. Brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Danny, so what do you expect to happen in this Bucks game?
The Bucks have played very well after a stinker, so I think we'll have a good game. This one might be enough for the Chiefs to be in peril and maybe lose it. But I still expect that because they're going to get some positive impact plays defensively, I think you're right about the fact that they'll probably get to Brady a few times and he might make a mistake or two. Other teams, when these games have been close, haven't really turned the ball over very much against the Chiefs. I think we probably might see a couple. But I expect the Bucks to play well. I'll still predict the Chiefs win, but I think this one, I think it's going to bear a strong resemblance to the last couple Chiefs games. I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking more for the Chiefs beatdown of the Bucks.
Well, that's what you said last week.
I know, and I'm just going to keep firing until I get it right. Pretty much, you know, that bothers me that you remember that, Danny. My predictions on Chiefs games are remarkably similar. I've been waiting on somebody to call me out for that. I was literally just sitting here listening to you going, do I need to just come to grips with the fact that the target on the back thing is true and all the games, like, they're just not going to blow people up?
The other part right now is the fact that the defense, I think the defense all year hasn't really been as good as their numbers. I think they're front runners. I think when the offense puts them in a good position and they can just freewheel it when the other team has either ditched their, well, they're down.
But real quick, is that any different than any other great defense?
No, I think there are defenses that can go out there and in a slug it out game can do their job. Every defense is better when they can pin their ears back. Agreed. But I think that when the games aren't like that, the Chiefs defense has been bad. Not kind of average. I mean, they've been bad. They've given up 30 in half their last six games, right?
No. Well, okay, if you're cherry picking, they've given up 30 in three of their 10 games.
And I thought it was the last, out of the last six, I thought it was three, but it doesn't matter. I think when they've been put in that situation, I think they've really made the offense win the game.
Yeah, that's right. You're right, because week five was the Raiders, and they gave up 40 there,
right.
So. Listen, I do think that the Bucks game is, you know, the line of demarcation. Like, either they're going to get back to playing good defense, or they are, you know, like you said, three out of the last six against a quality opponent in the Raiders twice and a mediocre to bad opponent in the Panthers once. you know, they're giving up these higher point totals. If they give it up to the Bucks, even if they win like 38-35, like there are problems with the defense.
Yes.
Like that will be official because, well, the Bucks are a good team and the Raiders are a good team. All right. Well, the Panthers aren't.
But also we're judging this team based on the fact they're going to have to win 3 or 4 playoff games. And those are going to be good teams.
To which I'm going to say, like, there are some big contracts on the defensive side of the ball, and you can give up 30-something without doing that.
Exactly.
I mean, like, there is the explaining that has to be done. Like, so when you see Chris Jones barking at DBs who are 7th-round picks, 4th-round picks, not drafted. Like, the guys that I saw at Charvarius Ward, Nate Taylor said he thought L'Jarius Sneed was there. That's an undrafted player that was acquired in a trade for a guy you were going to cut who then later got cut, and that's a 4th-round pick. The $21 million guy yelling at guys making $600,000, you're not getting it done, when they're having to blitz the $600,000 guys to get pressure on the quarterback, that falls on deaf ears real quick.
Right, and when Derek Carr, what did he get, hit five times? I mean, come on. By the way, Derek Carr was outstanding in that game. He played a great game.
So I expect, honestly, I think Chris Jones is going to have, like, multiple sacks against the Saints. Or against the Bucks.
Well, it's about time. I'll say that.
Well, he's got 5.5, and sacks come in bunches. I mean, like, right now you could be like, hey, Jamal Adams has got as many sacks as he does. Maybe more now because he had as many coming in. But sacks come in bunches, and they are. And Adam Teicher, like, so I'm fine with being critical of the defense, but let me also push back to the other side. Because if they have a big day, here's what you're going to hear, and these people are going to be right. I think both sides are right. Like, 3 of their last 6, they've given up 30 or more. Fact. Real. Potential problem. Or was a problem 3 out of the last 6 times, and is a problem moving forward if that's going to continue. If you're going to give up 30 or more, 50% of the time, you've got a problem on your hands, okay? Here's the other fact, though. They're towards the top in pressures. They're just not getting sacks. So is it a sign that eventually Spagnuolo starts dialing up the blitzes, and so they get some pressure numbers, but they're really not affecting the quarterback, and good quarterbacks are going to make it look like the Raider game? Or is it that the like sacks are a product of pressures and kind of like, you know, the ball on the ground 22 times and, you know, you're -8 in turnovers.
But
That's luck.
Right. But I heard you with Eric Eager yesterday.
Right.
And he was talking about, and he was ticking off the pressures that people had in the game. And I'm sitting there going, 6 pressures from Jones. And it added up to a bunch. Okay.
Right.
I watched the game. Where were those pressures?
Yeah, where were all of them? I agree. I was having the same thought.
I mean, what the hell? Derek Carr was operating with
Wait a minute, Danny. Wait, just hold that thought because I want you to add on to this with the thought you're having right now. How many of them were linebacker safety, corner linebacker safety? Like, a lot of them were Spagnuolo blitzes.
Right, but 6 of them, for instance, were supposed to be Chris Jones. I didn't see impactful Chris Jones out there. Was I watching a different game?
No, and I saw times where he was like, I made my rush. Oh, they threw it out there.
Exactly. There's hardly an Aaron Donald ticker going on there. I mean, you know, comparing a guy with the absolute best and beast in the game is a little unfair, but he fancied himself to be asking for a contract in that neighborhood. Play hard on every play.
I do think he is. I think he is a guy. Is it possible? Listen, let's say this. Is it possible Steve Spagnuolo has not done enough to get him one-on-one matchups? Right? Because when the Rams played the Chiefs, like, okay, the Chiefs want to get everybody out into the pattern. So the Rams are coming with 4, and how many times, 2018 I'm talking about, how many times did Aaron Donald work one-on-one with Cam Irving and just make him look like a rag doll?
A lot, and I agree that Steve Spagnuolo could do that. But when you see Aaron Donald doubled, he's not, like, crying and you know, grabbing a towel and weeping into it.
I agree with that. And Jones has got to beat double teams. There's no doubt. Part of making 21 – and Frank Clark has got to beat Colton Miller, who is considered a bust for 2 years. Now, I will point out, I think he was the 14th, 15th pick in the draft when he came out. He's 6'8", long-armed. He's the prototype left tackle, and it looks like it's all clicking, and that's a tough guy to beat on the outside.
Right.
And so I get it. But Frank Clark also needs to kick some left tackles' asses, okay, or at least draw the chip in the double team. Darren Waller needs to have to chip on his way out or those kind of things, right? It's not all just Chris Jones. I will say this, though, and I'm a big Steve Spagnuolo guy, but – and listen, maybe what it is, and I need to go back and look at more All-22s, because I use the All-22. You know, God bless the film guys like Seth Kaiser that will watch every play of the game on All-22. I don't have that kind of time, right? But I watch all the big plays on it. And say, okay, why did this one happen? Why did this one happen? Maybe I need to watch some of the non-big plays and see, is Chris Jones ever finding himself one-on-one with their weakest offensive lineman? Because I do think you have to be careful about, like, and this is what I talked about with Eric yesterday, justifying the contract. So trying to get Chris Jones sacks at the expense of playing good defense. Like, I think Chris Jones is at his best on the inside when he can outquick people. Right? He's plenty strong, but he's long, he's lean, you know, and he's long, he's not lean. He's long, he's strong. And I think on the inside, that quickness that he has is where he can do his most damage. But if Frank Clark's not getting there on the outside and they're bringing everything inside and Chris Jones is facing nothing but double teams, I think he's ideally a D tackle. But if you can put him out on a weak right tackle, I mean, they move J.J. Watt all over the place to take advantage of the mismatch. Like, to the frustration of guys that are like, hey, I'd like to go against Cam Irving every time. Right, but you won't blow him up. You'll have a 25% win rate. Aaron Donald will have a 70% win rate. So this is how we win games. Like, is it possible that part of it is Chris Jones is not being put against the weakest offensive lineman, which the Rams absolutely will do with Aaron Donald, and he's not getting the opportunities, and it's to the detriment of the defense?
I guess that's possible. I just am not philosophically inclined at this point, I guess, to search for benefits of the doubt for Chris Jones. I think he has to play better.
I'll take that, and we'll take a break. Okay. More with Danny Klingscale next. Here are the program brought to you by our friend.
The program with Soren Petro.
Yeah, you don't like getting licked. You like licking other guys, and it came out weird.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Danny Klingscale brought to you by Easton Roofing. Estimates are always free. Suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com right now for more. Get back to business faster. Get back to your life faster with Easton Roofing. Integrity matters. Danny, let's talk a little bit about some college basketball. K-State lost by 10. They were, when it tipped, a 4.5-point favorite. Mizzou getting ready to go here shortly. Any big expectations for the locals? KU's got Gonzaga on the other side here on Thanksgiving coming up tomorrow. What's your thoughts?
Well, you know, I didn't see much from the Cats today. I watched that game. I watched that game, you know, pretty intently. They look kind of lost. The freshmen look kind of lost. They only got stuff from McGurl and then DeJuan Gordon, and he was forcing the issue badly. Drake was the better team all day long, so that was, I guess, a little concerning. Missouri, I think, has a chance to be pretty good, but I think that, you know, they have a lot of pieces and how they mold together and whether Tillman can finally play 20 minutes a game is a big. So,
by the
so
way, he just got called for two fouls while
yeah,
you're talking.
They're going to play in seven.
In warm-ups.
They're going to play at 6, so he'll be in foul trouble by, what, game will tip at 6:07, so what, 6:11 he'll be on the bench. So that's important. But I think they have a chance to be good, and Kansas is, of course, going to be good. It's only a question of how good, but K-State certainly has a very young team, but today the freshmen looked like freshmen, and that's not particularly surprising considering the way that you've been able to practice and everything else. But they'll just need to see some strides. But I don't see them, you know, being impactful enough that they become a good team this year. Maybe they'll show signs that they can build for the next couple of years, but I don't see – that was bad today. You're supposed to beat Drake at home.
Yeah, I agree. Does KU beat Gonzaga?
I don't think so. I think that they're another team that's got to work some things in, and I think Gonzaga, they don't usually get this type of early season. They play a lot of good games early season, but not right off the bat in this type of setting. So I think they're really going to bring it. That doesn't mean they're going to be a better team maybe down the road than Kansas, but I think Gonzaga might get them tomorrow.
I agree with Fat Jack. Rock chalk points, don't need them. I'll play them on the money line. They win outright.
All right, like there you go.
Being bold and daring predictions.
Being bold is a good thing.
Danny. Yep. Danny, we are thankful for you, my friend. Love talking to you. It's always great. Love your insights, your strong opinions. All the best to you and your family. Have a great Thanksgiving, my friend.
Turnip will be delicious.
Jed Marshall.
If you don't light my fire, then don't come around, because I'm gonna burn one down.
Curtis Siebold.
You know what? When you're great, you don't have to say anything. People say great things about you.
Okay.
Clip that.
So, Ren Petro.
Can somebody help me out? Could somebody screw me? Could somebody screw me the way, he got hosed?